Hey, my name is Drew Brown III. Welcome to the Wingman Show, a show that we hope to inspire, we hope to inform, and we hope to motivate all of us to grow every day and be happy. My wingman, which means somebody who always watches your back, somebody who tells you the truth, whether you like it or not, my wingman is Dr. Paul Thompson. Dr. Thompson, how are you, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good, Mr. Drew. You've just heard from Drew Brown, Dark Gable, the American Dream, the man, the myth, the legend. He's the pilot's pilot, the role model, and his royal fullness. I'm doing very well today. How about you?
I'm doing good. I forgot to tell them about your little being a Navy jet pilot. I forgot to tell them being a commercial airline captain that's retired and got a lot of money. I forgot to tell them all that. Anyway, today's show is going to be about the Second Amendment, Paul. I was walking in Walmart the other day. All right. And I saw this woman with a boot on her leg with a 45 on her hip. I had to take a picture of her. It was the most ridiculous thing I ever seen. And here in Georgia, you can carry. I always wanted to run up to one of them and say, "Help me, officer, help me." Before we get into the Second Amendment, let me preface this all by saying I love guns. I have guns. I have a 44 Magnum like Dirty Harry. As soon as I saw that movie, I went and bought a 44 Magnum so I could say Smith, Wesson, and me. I have a 9mm, a Glock, and I have a 40 Beretta. So I love guns. What I don't like are people using the Second Amendment to say that it's their right to have a gun. I'll read you what the Second Amendment says.
Okay.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, number one, militia. The reason that there was a Second Amendment is because in the history of America, coming from England, they didn't want to be overtaken by a government again. And it made sense when everybody had guns that you had to load, and it took like a minute and a half to load. So if the government was coming, you had a chance. Okay, I'm about to put up some pictures on this of what the government uses, and you cannot beat them with your 357s, your 44 Magnums, or your shotguns. So just don't use that as an excuse. If you saw the Capitol riot, there was nothing well-informed about that militia. They're about the most ignorant people you could ever see. I said it before, these were white supremacist Klansmen who were actually going after the two whitest guys in America, Romney and Vice President Pence. So that's not well organized, and that's not what you would call a militia. There was a reason for the Second Amendment. But as in everything in our lives, things change, Paul. Things change and things become different. And when things become different, you have to change with them. Okay, having an AR-15 to kill a deer is not necessary. To have 40 banana clips with 100 rounds in it is not necessary. Now, nobody would probably be talking if they were on school shootings. Nobody would be talking about this if guns weren't a problem in our society today. So there's a reason that we're bringing this Second Amendment up. I just don't like people using information on our government, on our Constitution, on our amendments that they have no idea what they're talking about. None. It's a well-formed militia. That's the Second Amendment.
You know, it starts from 17th century, and the weaponry then was different than the weaponry now. You talked about taking a minute and a half to reload a gun. Well, you could probably empty like 5 clips in a minute and a half, really probably 50 clips in a minute and a half. You hear a lot about that. Most people carry because in the country there's basically a lot of fear. It's not so much about amendment this, amendment that. If you're walking around Walmart or Chick-fil-A or Sam's Club with a gun on your hip, you're probably not thinking too much about foreign intervention from China or Iran or Venus.
No, actually, the United States government is what it's for, not another government. It's for this government. If this government tried to take over the people, it's not for foreign government. We have a military for that.
Okay, true. But they could be, you could use the militia as a supplement, I guess, if everything was falling apart. This is just my imagination.
Wait, Paul, I love you and one of the smartest guys I ever met. No kidding. But are you telling me everything fell apart? You mean all of our aircraft carriers, all of our nuclear weapons, all of our Marines, Army, Air Force, Coast Guard, everybody fell apart. Then maybe we have a chance with my 44 Magnum, Smith, Wesson, and me.
It would make a great movie. There's plenty of movies about it. I think it was that Patrick Swayze was in it, Red something or other. It was a good movie. He makes a good movie.
Okay, I'll go with that.
But no, the thing is about, you know, you're not going to, if you're in Walmart or some shopping thing, you know, you're not going to fight the Navy SEALs or even a Boy Scout troop, to be honest with you.
Then why are you carrying a gun? Are you truly, seriously thinking somebody's going to come up to you and attack you? And if they did you truly believe that they're going to tap you on the shoulder, said, let's go outside and I'll meet you outside? Is that what you think is going to happen? Or do you think you'll just get attacked, knocked down, they'll take your gun and shoot you?
That could very well happen. You know, it's not going to be a duel, you know, at high noon or low noon. At the same time, there are people who can carry guns that have interrupted criminal enterprises and saved themselves. You know, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, that does happen.
Yes.
And one of the things that doesn't help is that all these videos of actual bad things that happen with, particularly with young people, roaming and talking. Now we've got great video and audio, you know, action movies where you can see what the intent is of a lot of these folks, and it's not good. And it doesn't help. So, you know, nobody should have. Well, these knuckleheads, some of them don't listen. You know, police brutality is bad. Criminal brutality is bad too.
Brutality is bad.
Exactly. You know, it's horrible. But there's just a lot of fear in the country anyway. And there's something I can quote from, from Star Wars. I got it up here. From Master Yoda. And this is important. Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. I sense much fear in you.
Get down, brother Yoda.
Yeah, Yoda. But you know, the point is, you know,
the point is, it's true, Paul.
It's true, and that's what the screenwriter wrote. But the fact is, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear from things in the past. A lot of things from fears.
Can I tell you a little story?
Go.
In Memphis, why guns are not a good idea. I told you I love guns, and because I told you I had that little badge, it actually had a stamp on it that says, "This is not a gun permit." But I kind of didn't read that part.
Call yourself Deputy Dog?
So anyway, I got a license to carry, and I carried a gun. And I totally changed. I was not the same person. I'd go to the bank. You know, I used to go to the bank and stand online. I'd let people go in front of me in case there was a robbery and I could take care of it. People would look at me. You know, somebody would stare at you in the car, and usually you look, they look, and you kind of both look away. Oh, I'm not looking away anymore. Matter of fact, I was driving with Little Drew in an open air, our Jeep, and he didn't know I had a gun, but I was driving, and these badass dudes, you know, brothers from Orange Mount, drove up next to us, and they were just talking. They were, you know, they were cracking and everything, and I was like, yo, what's up, dog? What's up? I was totally so different. Like I said, you never know what I got, dog. You never know what I got. So I was acting the role because I really did have it. I didn't like the way, I'll be honest with you. My parents didn't raise me like that. I am not that type of person. Put that gun away and I don't carry anymore. And it was about a 2-week period, actually. But it really made me a different person, Paul. It was totally different how I would handle a situation. It's like why they want to defund the police, because when you have a gun, it's a totally different situation. When you go to a domestic abuse case, maybe somebody who is a social worker should be there. There's no gun there. You know, there should be somebody backup. There should be an assessment, is what I'm saying. But as soon as you bring a gun into the picture, this is life or death on everybody's part.
Right, Right.
You know, in England, the cops used to not carry guns. I think they probably changed now.
Yeah, they changed.
And I saw something that was, you could YouTube it. This crazy man had a knife, a big knife, and he was going around. You know what happens here if you have a knife and they tell you to put it down and they have their guns drawn, you don't put it down?
Right.
Okay, yeah. They shoot, you're dead. Anyway, right. This guy was waving it and swinging it. The bobbies went and got the riot shields. Mm-hmm. You know, the big shields, they're about 4 feet long, the ones that they were throwing in the capitals. Those son of a gun, never mind. Anyway, they took them and about 20 guys just walked in on him. I thought that was one of the coolest things I ever saw. They actually were able to take that situation and not turn it violent.
How many guys? You said it was like 20 of them?
Okay, maybe I exaggerated. I exaggerated a lot. 10.
Enough to close in on.
10. Oh, there was a lot. Not 3 or 4. It was you could not do anything with the knife. Not even close. You couldn't get even between. I mean, he was kind of freaked out when this circle was closing in on him, actually. And it kind of, he knew that he couldn't get away. So, anyway. Policemen have very hard jobs, and I wouldn't be one. First of all, I wouldn't stop you at night, ever. Every time I stopped somebody, I'd have my gun out. I would not be a good cop. I don't play that. If you threaten my life, I'd kill you. That's why they beat Rodney King. I hated that excuse that he threatened their life. Well, if you threaten my life as a police officer, you don't have a life anymore. So, anyway, guns are a problem, Paul.
Well, even if you talk about England, they don't have that many guns, but they have a lot of what they call knife crime. They use knives. They use a lot of them. They use them quite well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to do what they're going to do.
Making laws that make common sense. I carry a gun for protection. I carry a gun to hunt. I own a gun in my home for home protection. This is why I have a gun. It's not the Second Amendment. And I have a right to protect myself. So make another amendment. Because the Second Amendment was really written for a serious reason. And that's for our own government not to overtake us.
Right. And there's some people who are worried about the government takeover. You know, they think they're coming at you every time there's a false flag event. There are a lot of conspiracy theories. A lot of them are probably true. You just don't know which ones are.
What are you going to do against an A6? Just let me know. If you do think the government's coming after you in today, 2021, you need to get your ass out of the country.
That's true.
Because you're not stopping the government.
You don't think you could stop an F-35?
These people don't have critical thinking, Paul. That's all I'm saying. We need it, our politicians, the people, everybody just needs to start being honest about things. Systemic racism. I thought about this, but I can explain systemic racism. It was that those cops didn't shoot those white people. That was systemic racism. Because if they were anything other than white, violently trying to get into the capital of the United States, they would have been mowed down.
Yeah.
Period. Systemic racism was in the hearts and minds of all these police officers, all these Americans who just didn't think that that was something that could be done or that was something that they could prove in court that they had the right to do. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel right to them. That's why they didn't do it. But if you got 100 people coming at me, somebody's getting shot. And when they did shoot her, everything stopped at that door.
It did for a second. Yeah, it did. Yeah. That something didn't go to plan, didn't go with the script.
Everything stopped immediately. Just like if they were to start coming up those steps and 2 people got shot, things would have been a lot different.
I think you're right. You know, I thought, not getting off topic, but I thought about, my mother and mothers of other friends of mine, and I'm trying to envision a situation where if I wanted to invade the capital of the United States, my mother would come with me and we'd both have flex cuffs. I can't, I'm trying to visualize her doing that. So there's also some expectation. There was an expectation of good treatment. But I mean, there's crazy people everywhere. But I think they expected to be treated well. And, it's almost like everybody's kind of on the same team, or they should be on the same team. You're with us, I'm with you. And that's the most disturbing aspect of it. Because I link that with the attack on Mother Emanuel Church in South Carolina. when he killed the nine people in the church, picked up by the police, and what did they do? They didn't take him to Ruth Chris Steakhouse, but he went to Burger King because he was hungry. I saw that as a reward, and I saw that as more of a statement than the murder of the people. I saw that more as a systemic statement of the system.
So, in other words, I think we have an enemy, but you have to call out the right enemy, and it's not white people. Crackers are people who don't like black people. Crackers are people who don't like people who don't look like them. That's who they are. They're not white people. It has nothing to do with melanin at all. It's an attitude. Matter of fact, there's a guy who drives around here sometimes with a big Confederate flag. One guy. And honest to goodness, I finally saw that truck in a parking lot. I don't know what it took for me not to just wait for him and say something. It just so happened that he started coming towards the truck while I was walking towards the truck. And he looked so bad, Paul. All of the hate came out of me. He looked so poor and so raggedy and so destitute. It was like his only hope. Honest to goodness, I felt totally different about this guy and about this whole situation. It was like, I almost, okay, if that's all you got, dog, go ahead and fly it. It's the human in me.
We're in the third decade of the 21st century, and everybody wants to go back to the 19th. Everything's wants to go backward, back. That's kind of like almost going back into the womb, looking for a sense of comfort in a world that is complex and changing and just threatening to a lot of folks. You know, you see it here. You know, you want it to be one way, but if you ever go to the hospital, any major hospital, I was hospitalized a few years ago for quite a while in this area, which is kind of like, I wouldn't call it the countryside, but it was like the United Nations. So if you had a hard time with people who look different, you know, I'd say don't get sick.
Well, you were raised in New York also. We're in Atlanta, and there are a lot of people who haven't been around people different than themselves. The only vision they have of a black person, of an Indian, of an Asian, is what they see on TV. And that's how they react, just like you and I would react if we haven't seen anybody different than we had.
Right.
You got to remember, black people also deep in the South who haven't been around any white people, they only expect a certain kind of person. And it's the ones that the media or that you see on television. You only are what you learn, period. It has nothing to do with melanin. It has something to do with what's inside you, what was taught to you. That's all.
Yeah. Second, everybody has the right to self-defense, but in the country in general, there is a lot of fear. North, south, east, and west. Doesn't matter where you are. In this country, there's a lot of fear.
And you want to know something? That's why I live where I live. I'm not going to name the town, but I live in Mayberry. I've always wanted to live in Mayberry. Barney Fife, one bullet in the shirt pocket. And, you know, I don't lock my car. I don't lock my house. I don't want to live in fear. So I know exactly what you're talking about. We grew up in the projects. I grew up when I would actually watch the front door wiggle. People were checking doors to see if they were open. I remember that distinctly. Mm-hmm. Sitting in the kitchen because the door was right there. And all of a sudden, your doorknob was wiggling.
I mean, we were robbed one time. I mean, it's not good. It's a bad feeling, actually. That's another story.
In Harlem, we were robbed also. They took our stereo. But my mama knew somebody, like a really tough Puerto Rican dude, really a bad dude, and we had our stereo back.
Yeah, right. That happens. Yeah, again, I wasn't in a project in Queens, but, you know, the house is burgled. That was when drugs were becoming a thing in the 60s. Everybody's house got robbed because the locks were like nothing, even in New York. The locks were like nothing. Then after a while, you know, do or have like about 900
locks. Yeah.
You know, doing things like that. takes 20 minutes to open. If you had a fire, I mean, you're gone. It didn't work, but it made you feel better. So it'd be a deadbolt lock. What's that? You know, that was a new thing.
I'm glad we didn't have guns then because a lot of people would have got shot right away.
Yes. Yes.
If I would have, the scariest thing I used to do was walk down the staircase in the projects, 11 flights of stairs, and every other light bulb would be broken, so it'd be black. and you don't know what was. It was like better than Disney World. Best scary ride.
Yeah. You basically you had a haunted house that was there that you didn't have to pay to get in.
Correct, but it was real.
Right.
If you met something, it was more than a ghost, baby.
That's right.
So that's how we entertained ourselves. Actually,
go on the subway at a certain time, certain place.
Ooh, baby.
That's going to be better than any Magic Mountain.
And the great thing about us growing up there, see, that's why we learned to accept all kind of people. That because we saw all kind of people.
Right.
We grew up around all kind of people. Paul, if they would have taken you as an infant and brought you to China, you'd be Chinese right now, speaking right. Hell of a Chinese. Little right. Dark-skinned Chinese boy. You know this part of the show, our 11 facts in life. And today, fact number 5 is the art of thought, the art of communication, and the art of action. And a quick explanation of it is the art of thought. I believe everybody thinks, and we all think of ideas. No matter where you are in life, you think of ideas. And some of them are very lofty ideas, which are good because it all starts in your head. So thinking of doing great things is great. That's what you're supposed to do. You should always think of how you can better yourself, how you can do better, how you can do more. Then it's the art of communication. So now you have to take that thought and you have to vocalize it, which a lot of people do very well. Their ideas, talk. They're always talking about the things they're thinking about. And the one thing about the art of communication that's really serious is that my mother made sure I spoke English well. Now, I make mistakes. My daughter gets on me all the time. But I work on my English, like I'm talking slow now, like President Barack Obama. I always felt bad because he always had to watch what he was saying. I learned Hebrew. Because if you want to live somewhere and you want to communicate with the people there, you need to learn their language. And because I learned Hebrew, I was able to talk with all the people and I really got into the Israeli culture. And I loved it. I had a great year that year. So I don't like when people immigrate to this country and don't learn English only because I think it's putting handcuffs on them for the ability to rise beyond what they came here for. Even if you're smart and you can't speak English well, people think you're stupid. If somebody wrote you an email right now and they misspelled 6 words, no matter what they wrote you, you're not impressed and you probably would overlook it. So the art of communication is important. And one thing I realized is growing up in Harlem, being black, we have 2 different languages. We got street talk and we have regular English. Mm-hmm. And my dad used to speak street talk that I didn't even understand. And because it continuously changes. Mm-hmm. Here's the coolest thing about being a young black man. Did you ever notice nobody's ever asked you what the new word means? What they do is they listen to the new word, they put it in its proper perspective, and they finally realize they work at learning what that new word is because it is so uncool to say, hey, man, what's off the hizzy? What's off the hook? Right. Is it off the chain or on the chain? So we don't do that because it's all about perception. So even when somebody says the cool word to you, like, yeah, dog.
You'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. You do.
Why do you figure it out? Because you're motivated to be accepted. So if you have the brain to figure out something that never was explained to you, why can't you learn Spanish that is explained? Why can't you learn French that is explained? Why can't you learn English that is explained? Because when you can communicate, you can finally get your ideas across. Enough on communication. Here's the biggest one, the art of action. It means nothing if you think. It means nothing if you talk. The only thing that matters are the things that you do. Talking about basketball, telling your friends that you want to be in the NBA, and not passing math is the art of thought, the art of communication, and the non-art of action. It's not your intentions people work on. They work on your actions. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't tell a woman you love her and hit her. What's your take, doctor?
I think you've got to adapt to your surroundings. You know, if I'm in the country for a long time, yeah, I'm gonna learn the language. I used to fly to Japan a lot in the 80s, and I started doing a little Japanese on some tapes. You know, it didn't go very well. You know, it didn't go very well at all, just on my own. But I did put in the time, and I did pick up like two or three words, and I was never conversational at all. There was one time, I think I was somewhere in Tokyo, and there was no English at all. No English at all. You just had to kind of figure it out, and you couldn't communicate with them. They couldn't communicate with you.
When we used to travel the world, those were the restaurants that I used to love to go to, that they had no English. Mm-hmm. I used to go in the restaurant, look at other people's foods, point to it, yeah, and put my hand out with foreign money and take what it costs. Right. That's the way to eat.
If they had pictures are good.
You're correct. Paying. When the ship pulled into France, some of these knuckleheads went to the first bar and McDonald's
for
the entire trip to France.
I would never drunk, do that.
Came back and told everybody back home they went to France.
Well, you know, that's funny. McDonald's is popular in all over the world, believe it or not.
It's our way of killing the world.
In Paris, you got McDonald's at the two levels.
There's your conspiracy right there. Not QAnon, McDonald's. Fast food.
KFC.
That's right.
Go to the Arab
Asians
world.
Are now becoming fat.
And diabetic.
Isn't that something?
And diabetic.
And diabetic, yeah.
More so than Americans, yeah.
And I'm not talking about McDonald's per se, because I don't want to say that they're any different than any other fast food. The only reason I use McDonald's, if you want to know the truth, when I was speaking to kids, I said, if you don't plan on going to college, get out of school today, because McDonald's needs you. Well, McDonald's heard it on national television, and they flew me up to Chicago to McDonald's University. Uh-huh. And they were like, we want to support you, and we really like what you're doing with these kids, but we're going to need you to stop saying McDonald's. I said, 100% I'll stop saying it when you stop hiring dropouts. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I kept saying McDonald's. If nobody hired dropouts, then they wouldn't drop out. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you understand that?
Right.
If you weren't allowed to hire a kid that didn't have a GED, a high school diploma, or a report card, that's what they would get. Kids are like cattle. You put them in a fenced-in area, whether it's 10 acres or 100 acres. They walk that fence line. If there's a hole in it, they get out. What about the art of thought?
One of the things that a lot of people don't have is that the art of thought, also the art of reason. You have to be able to reason things out, to use some logic, because there's a lot of times you've got these zero-tolerance policies. It is not just with young people. It's with everyone. Zero tolerance. Well, that's kind of a lazy way of saying I can't reason anything. So the first instance of whatever, it's something severe. It's something this busted taillight. No, nobody should die for that. Nobody should die for a part you can get at AutoZone for $4.75. In my opinion, if you scuff up someone's sneaker, that has always been. That has always been.
Not just police. These are human beings. It's a human trait. We need to start talking about our race, the human race.
Okay.
Because qualities that are alike.
Well, the same thing. It could be, you take police out of it. You're just driving down the street and someone cuts you off or you cut them off. You made a mistake. It could be a life or death situation.
Correct.
And that happens.
Correct.
Often. That's more frequent, actually.
So, remember.
To reason, to think out. Reason. They can't reason.
That's critical thinking that we were talking about. A badge, a gun, and truly the ability to ruin your life. Critical thinking is to remove yourself as quickly as possible from that situation. That's all I'm saying. Critical thinking. That's the art of thought. Continue, Dr. Paul.
At the same time, you got to be careful. Every once in a while, I'm driving and the horn is beeping aggressively and someone comes out to the side. I let them do what they want to do. But I kind of look around the car and make sure I got what I need in case I need it.
Mm-hmm.
Instinctively. I just, okay, oh yeah, it's there, good. Just in case, should be nothing. My feelings haven't been totally hurt, but I don't want to be totally unprepared because things happen these days and they can happen in seconds.
Last week I was in the hood and I cut somebody off. Four brothers. It was almost like an Ice Cube movie.
Okay.
I cut them off. Do you know what I did? I sped up to them and they were ready. And I said, I'm so sorry. So sorry, dudes, man. My fault. They were so taken aback. They had no idea how to react with that.
Right.
They only knew how to react at me being aggressive, and they were on point ready. And when I came with a real sincere apology, it threw them totally off until they became kids again and went, okay. See you later. I was like, thanks, guys, man. I'm so sorry again.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the way it is, because you rolled up on them. Well, you might have been ready to do some bad stuff.
That's what I was trying to give them.
To get ready.
That's what I was trying to give them the impression of, because I was sorry and I was wrong.
Okay, yeah, but you can see how that might work against you.
Not if I do it as quick as I did and say I'm sorry. Okay. I ain't seen nobody draw.
As a police officer taking the report. Yeah, he came right up on us. Okay.
Right. Like that be black on black crime? No, there is no black on black crime also, just to let crime. You know. It's just crime. Yeah. When the Valentine's Day massacre, remember that?
Yes.
Was that considered white on white crime?
Never heard the term.
Okay, then there's no black on black crime. A black person, black on black crime means I'm looking for you because you're black, and that's why I'm robbing you. That's what black on black crime is. I'm just robbing you because you're there.
So what was
we're just having a gang fight because you're the gang that we don't like. This is no black on black. Once we continue to have special categories and allow that, we are not part of the whole. And you said something very interesting a little while ago, using the word all. You know, when you say white people, black people, 100% you're wrong, no matter what you're going to say after that. The one thing I learned, there's no 100% of anything other than God to me. It just isn't. There are always exceptions to everything. The art of thought, critical thinking.
When you make a categorical observation and you find an exception to it, it tends to weaken the argument.
No, it tends to blow it up. As soon as you say white people, you're wrong because my mother's white. So everything you just said is wrong, because I guarantee you she's not what you think.
Okay, which is weakening the argument, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, right. I'm a little bit more aggressive. I'm an attack pilot. I blew your argument out of the water. Take it home. Walk away.
And that's why we have the Second Amendment, because that's why we have it for people like you.
Okay, okay, you talked about the art of thought. You talked about the art of communication. What's your take on the art of action? To me, the biggest one of those three.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Take action. You got to do something. You can't play. The paralysis of analysis is easy to overanalyze stuff. And I'm guilty of that sometimes, too. On the other hand, you can't just make a quick move and do the wrong thing and hurt yourself. So at some point, you've got to take action. Otherwise, it's just theory. Nothing else happens. Unless you're forced into it. You got to take your test. You got to take action. You got to turn something in on time. You got to take action. Get it done. Long process. Don't wait till the night before. It doesn't work out well. I've done that a few times.
Can I say a curse word? The FCC comes, gets us. It's okay. Here's the curse word about being on time. Early.
Early.
But have you ever heard of the word early when you're supposed to be somewhere at 9? Have you ever thought about getting there at 8:50? When you're supposed to meet your friends at 2? Have you thought about being there maybe a quarter to 2, checking out the situation? Because you're mostly always early for a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're prioritizing what's important. Yet I truly believe people's time are their most valuable asset, their most valuable commodity, because it's just something we don't get back. Art of thought, art of communication, the art of action. And Dr. Paul Thompson, you always have good stories. You have a wingman story for us?
Here's a good one. I think this goes out to the people at JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, and NASA for getting this Perseverance rover landing on Mars just a few days ago. Just think about it. took about 7 months, 7.5 months to go 293 million miles to deliver another rover onto Mars, which was interesting as you had a kind of real-time video, kind of like the moon landing. But before it landed, the entry vehicle dropped the rover from a very small altitude, and then it flew off. And I think it flies off to go somewhere and just crash.
Anyway,
this rover, it's doing its thing, but it's a long-term mission because it's going to collect samples of rocks and actually eventually send them back to Earth. Well, how's that going to happen? Well, it's going to pick up these rocks, put them in a canister, deposit these canisters different places where it's going. And some later time, I think about 20, 25, or 26, they're going to launch another vehicle, another rover that's going to come. They're going to drop that rover down, and this rover is going to have a vehicle in it. It'll pick up those canisters, the first one left. It'll have some rockets, and it's going to fire them into space.
What?
And then sometime later, another rover, this is like 2031, 10 years from now, there's another space vehicle that'll come and pick up these samples that have been shot into space. Can't give you the orbital mechanics on that. But I just thought, but look at the coordination to do any of this stuff, to do anything. But that's the plan. 2031 is the time to get the rocks back here for analysis. You know, what it takes to work on a team. When they were landing, you see all the people kind of spread out in the control room, and there'd be like twice as many, but because of COVID and this, you know, they got them all spread out. How they have to work together, and when they land successfully, they're all elated. And it kind of reminded me sometimes, you know, landing on the ship at night, you know, after a difficult night, and say, wow, it's great. You know, you're elated, and you also kind of want to go to sleep. Because of the stress of everything that happened. But just basically the ability to persevere. They call it perseverance. What is perseverance? It's basically sticking with something, even though it's difficult. You do it anyway. You try to do it the best you can. As President Kennedy said, we go to the moon not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And I guess they're getting ready to go back to the moon again at some point. Elon Musk thinks he'll be on Mars in like 5 years to have people up there.
You know, this week from Memphis, a cancer survivor, and she lost her leg years ago due to cancer, and she's a young lady, and she's one of the people who are going to be the civilian team to go up into space with Elon Musk. Yes, and they're trying to raise $200 million for St. Jude's, who I donate to, and I'm not saying that for any other reason than that is one heck of a place, boy, that really does help kids. Well, this has been a great show, Paul. Thank you for that Wingman story. People working together to put something on Mars and in 10 years pick it up.
Right. And different groups of people are going to have to keep working to make that happen.
Sure. That's Wingman.
Right.
That's Wingman. Well, everybody, thank you so much for being with us. We know your time is the most valuable asset that you have, and we hope we inspired, we hope somebody learned something, and we hope we motivated all of us to be happy, because that's what it's all about. So, you know, we're just two dope boys in some Navy jets. Paul, we float like butterflies and we sting like bees. Ah! Rumble, jet pilots, rumble. See you later.
See you later.